I want to welcome you all to this meeting of the Medicaid Advisory Committee of the Human Services Department. And this is an annual meeting we always have during the course of the state legislature to look at the latest budget projections. I want to welcome each and every one of you here. And we'll get started off with introductions, starting with Linda here at the...
Good morning, my name's Linda Sekovic. I'm with the New Mexico Healthcare Association, and we represent long-term care facilities and programs.
I'm Teresa Turrieta, New Mexico Association for Home and Hospice Care.
Dale Tinker, New Mexico Pharmacists Association.
Mike Batt, I'm a public member of this committee.
Carolyn Montoya, I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner, and I'm with the College of Nursing at UNM.
Good morning, Mary Eden for Presbyterian, representing the Centennial Care Managed Care Organizations.
Hi, I'm Mark Coleman with DOH, Developmental Disability Supports Division.
Good morning, Gene Varela, AARP.
I'm Mike Nelson, I'm Deputy Secretary at the Human Services Department.
Good morning, Nancy Smith-Leslie, I'm the Medicaid Director.
Good morning, Jason Sanchez, Medical Assistance Deputy Director.
And I'm Larry Martinez with the with Presbyterian Medical Services, and I'm serving as the chairman of the Medicaid Advisory Committee. And let's have everyone who's in the audience introduce themselves, starting with Wayne.
Wayne Nystrom, Behavioral Health Services.
Good morning, Angela Medrano, Deputy Director of the Medical Assistance Division.
Good morning, Mary Kay Pera, the New Mexico Alliance for School-Based Healthcare.
Good morning, Maria Hoy-Balvarello with Medical Assistance.
Tabitha Mondragon with the Medical Assistance.
Christine Berner, Legislative Finance Committee.
Good
morning, Karen Matter, Behavioral Health Services Division.
Me, Katari, Behavioral Health.
Doris Houston, the Arc of New Mexico.
Good morning, Amy Dixon, Desert States Physical Therapy Network.
Hi, my name is Juanita Rupp. I'm a brand new medical director of Medical Assistance Division.
Very good. Pete Seaman, United Healthcare.
Mark Rosenblatt, Innovate Greater New Mexico PACE.
Joey Glenn, registered lobbyist for home care and hospice.
College nursing agency.
Matt, do you disability advocate?
Cynthia Nelson, a parent and an advocate.
Lisa Rosignol, parents reaching out, mother of a 9-year-old who's on the Medicaid program.
Thank you, everyone, for your introduction. We'll look at the agenda. Item number 2 on the agenda is approval of the agenda. So. Are there any recommended changes, modifications to the agenda on the part of the membership of the Medicaid Advisory Committee? Seeing none, I will entertain a motion to approve the agenda. Moved by Gene Varela, seconded by Dale Tinker. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing that there's none, all those in favor of the motion to adopt the agenda, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. The agenda is formally approved. Let me direct your attention to the minutes of the November 14th meeting of the Medicaid Advisory Committee. These were distributed previously to us. Are there any corrections, changes, or additions to be made to the minutes of the previous meeting of the Medicaid Advisory Committee? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the November 14th, 2016 meeting. Thank you, Mark Coleman. Moved to approve it. Mary Eden made a second to that motion. Is there any discussion? Seeing there's none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. The minutes of the meeting are now formally approved also. And now we'll go to item number 4, the real reason we're all here. And I'll turn it over to Jason Sanchez, and hopefully we'll have some lights staying up. I know we've been accused once in a while of being in the dark, but it was metaphorically, not literally, you know. So, okay, Jason, we'll turn it over to you to talk about the Medicaid budget projections.
Great. Good morning to you all again. We're here talking about the Medicaid budget projections, and there are, in fact, 4 separate documents in your handout. There's the 3 documents that are in tiny, tiny print, and then there's the staple document that is in font that's just a little bit bigger. So Just want to make sure draw you all those to your attention. We're going to start off with the document that says FY16 Lang model. And we're going to start off on the page that's landscape. That's our FY16 expenditure projection. A few lines I'd like to point out that have changed since our last projection. Line 10, clinic services. You're going to see a $1.4 million increase in that line, and that's tied to Medicaid school-based services. And that is primarily due to reconciliation showing that more services are occurring than we originally had projected. Line 21, Centennial Care Physical Health, you're going to see a $3.7 million net increase. It's based upon a combination of factors, a $7.4 million increase associated with the smaller impact of our desktop recoupments, which does a reconciliation of loss of eligibility, death, and Medicare eligibility. $5.7 million increase due to lower recoupment from retro eligibility reconciliation, and $9.4 million decrease due to recoupment from the United Healthcare as they did not meet the Superintendent of Insurance's medical loss ratio requirement for their 2015 rates.
Can you shut down the tiny bit?
Sure. Thanks. Line 22, Centennial Care Long-Term Services and Supports. You're going to see a $3.4 million increase in the previous projection. Reflects a couple of elements, an increase of $1.9 million covering lower than expected patient liabilities for the long-term services and support services, and a $1.5 million change in member months associated with covering additional retroactive enrollment. On to line 35, our health insurance provider fee. That is a decrease of $1.9 million below where we were in our previous projection. And that is reflecting our final calculation of expenditures associated with our managed care companies for FY16. Lines 37 and 38, overall decrease of $2.7 million compared to the prior projection, reflecting two elements, $1.8 million in additional recoupments for retro eligibility, and a $1.4 million in additional risk corridor recoupments. That takes us down to line 42, which is kind of our bottom line. So the amount from FY16, which is going to be pushed forward or charged into FY17, is estimated to be $36.6 million, $5.7 million lower than the last projection. So I'll go ahead and pause there for a moment to see if there are any questions on the FY16 expenditure projection.
Yes, Mike.
Mr. Chairman, I can guess this probably, but in column H, line 37, there's a negative adjustment there. What's that?
That's actually associated with our risk corridor recoupments, and that just had been a slight increase from the last projection. There were significant changes from the prior projection to this projection that was previously captured.
Yeah, so can you explain what that is actually?
Corridor. Sure, yeah. Sure. We actually have a risk corridor established with our managed care organizations associated with our expansion population. Essentially what it is that we, going in, did not know exactly the type of utilization as or expenditures that this new population to us would have. So we established a risk corridor around that so that we would not overpay or underpay. So in essence, what occurred is that we, in fact, overestimated our expenditures, so we took back a lot of dollars from the managed care organizations based upon that risk corridor.
Okay, and is that based on, Mr. Chairman, is that based on a loss ratio, or what? How do we...
Yeah, it's based on what we build into the rates versus what is actually...
It sounds almost like the upper and lower payment caps mm-hmm. that were actuarially done on the basis of cohort experience.
Right.
So the expansion population
didn't cost us
as much
right.
as we thought it was going to cost.
Correct.
That's exactly correct. Okay, yes, Carolyn, you've got a question?
Just to remind you also that is all 100% federally funded, so that money is returned to the federal government. It's not to the general fund.
So I just want to be clear. Thank you. You're very fast. I'm not. we are now projecting a $36 million carry.
Yes, correct.
Into the next week's.
Correct. $5.7 million less than what we projected previously.
Okay. A little less than we have to come up with.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the Medicaid Advisory Committee on the first one? We've got a few more to go. Okay. Seeing there none, let's go to the second one, Jason.
Turning over to the back page, which is our revenue page. The line that I want to point out that has a significant change is line 87. We are, in fact, projecting a general fund shortfall of $10.9 million, which is $1.7 million lower than the last projection. And again, that reflects the fewer amounts that we just spoke of that we are pushing forward from FY16 into FY17. Are there any questions about the FY16 revenue page?
Okay, Dale?
A comment. You budgeted, it looks like, 32-something million for drug rebates, and I don't have my magnifying glass, but it looks like 31 million that's actually collected, 31-something, 242.
That is correct. We budgeted 32,963, actuals of 31,240.
But then the next column you have HSD projection. So why is the projection different than the budget? Is that just a correction?
It's based upon actual experience throughout the year. And at this point for FY16, that is the actual amount that we've collected, so we will not be able to collect any more for 16.
Okay, because that's the year-end total.
That's the actual that we collected, yes, year-end total.
Okay, so
that was on line 67.
About $1.5 million loss would figure into that $10 million loss projection.
Correct. And keep in mind as well is that it's tied to the expenditure projection. So as we shift it down associated with the risk corridors that we spoke of previously, a lot of these revenues associated with actual experience we're going to shift down as well.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Okay, I think we can go on to the next one, Jason.
Okay, moving into the next year, FY17 lag model. I want to point out a few lines, line 1, line 7, and line 13. Each experience decreases in terms of the amount that we're projecting, and it's primarily associated with lower than expected expenditures through the month of October 2016, so we've scaled those lines downward.
And that's on our fee-for-service program.
Line 4, IME, is the estimated payment that is annualized based upon our actual quarter one experience. This represents a decrease of $9.8 million from the previous projection, which was based upon what we had experienced in FY16.
And, Jason, that is all funding that goes to University of New Mexico Hospital,
yes.
IME? That's indirect medical education. Okay.
Lines 18 and 19, which is DD medically fragile and our MEVIA waivers, we're essentially seeing a shift of expenditure of the projection, a reduction of traditional DD of $2.2 million and an increase of just over $2 million in our MEVIA waiver. And we kind of see that as a shift and a movement of clients from traditional to MEVIA. Okay. Line 21, Centennial Care Physical Health. The estimated expenditures for Centennial Care Physical Health increased by a total of $3.3 million, reflecting a net of a few items. $3.3 million decreased due to lower than previously estimated CY17 rates. $1.3 million increase associated with a smaller projected impact of the loss of eligibility. And a $5.3 million increase in our projected expenditures in Indian Health Services through our managed care organizations. Line 22, Centennial Care LTSS, projected expenditure increase is, I'm sorry, projected expenditure decrease is $11.7 million lower than the prior projection. A mix of things as well. Savings of $18.5 million associated with lower CY17 managed care premiums, $4.9 million in additional expenses for LTSS member month growth, and a $1.8 million increase for Indian Health Services reconciliation payments. Line 23, Centennial Care Behavioral Health, estimated expenditure for Centennial Care Behavioral Health decreases by $23.9 million, primarily from lower than projected CY17 premium rates. Do need to point out, though, that this is an increase in behavioral health spending in terms of a year over year, even though this is a lower projection than what we had previously. Line 26, Medicare Part B. The expenditure projection is decreased by $6.5 million from the previous projection. This is primarily due to a change in how and the rates that the federal government is projecting to charge us. They were projecting an increase in a rate of 149, and they actually took some of their reserves to help reduce that to $134 for our Medicare Part B premiums, thus reducing the amount of expenditures we'll have to incur, that we'll have to incur there. Lines 37 and 38 are projected expenditures for the Medicaid expansion population decreased by $59.7 million. Three elements associated with that, $60.4 million from reduced managed care premiums, reduction of $3.3 million for member months, and an increase of $3.9 million in IHS reconciliation payments. So that takes us down to line 41, which is the amount that we have charged from FY16 into FY17, and like we spoke previously, that is now 36.6, which is 5.7 million lower than what was included in the last projection. And I'll go ahead and pause there for questions from the FY17 lighting model.
Jason, it appears we have no questions, so let's go to revenue.
Turning over to the back page, FY17 revenue page. The first item I want to point out is if you look on line 51 in the box on the right-hand side, projected revenues, you're going to see an item, IHS referral, 100% FFP, which is an increase in revenue of $15,591,000. And that is the amount that we're projecting we're going to receive due to CMS guidance for services received through IHS. That is the amount that is associated with an agreement that occurred between IHS and UNM back in the 50s, and we believe that we can collect that additional revenue associated with the CMS guidance for IHS in this current year.
That was a settlement in the 50s, you say?
Wow. Yes.
Well,
were you here?
You were here at the very beginning, right?
Unfortunately, I was, but I was around in the 50s, but Medicaid didn't come along until 65 with Medicaid and Medicare. So I need to research that settlement or they're settling on.
So we do feel confident about the receipt of this revenue. However, I do need to point out that it is awaiting CMS approval.
So this new guidance that CMS released allows states to claim 100% for services received through an IHS facility. Typically, the 100% was restricted to those services provided in the IHS facility, and these are services that they refer to, say, UNM for inpatient services. UNM has had an agreement with IHS for a long time. The CMS guidance requires new care coordination agreements to be established for these services to be claimed, and we are making the argument that they really have that already in place. It is an agreement that's been in existence since the 1950s, and so we are going ahead and claiming those inpatient services at UNM that took place since they released the guidance in April, and that amounts to about 15.5. Is that a 5 or a 9?
Five, 15.6. 15.591.
Million for this FY17 year.
Thank you, Nancy.
Does that make sense now.
And just one item I neglected to point out is that represents 16 months of activity since this guidance was effective in February of 2016.
Okay.
That takes us to line 55, County Supported Medicaid Fund, and we're projecting an increase of $1.5 million because of somewhat stronger than expected taxable gross receipts for the first few months of FY17. Line 58, UNM IGT, estimated amount to be transferred from UNM Hospital in FY17 is lower than we had originally projected, and this ties to the draft MOU for the enhanced inpatient rates and also assumes that UNM will fully cover the state's portion for IME and GME payments. So that takes us to the overall bottom line 84. General fund need for FY17 has decreased by $30.2 million. So the current projection shows a general fund surplus of $5.2 million. And again, it is a surplus based upon all of those changes that we just spoke of.
I'm not blaming that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's going against the current.
Considering the enrollment growth that we have seen in the program, this is pretty astounding, I think, that we're actually showing a surplus.
I do have a question.
Yes, Dale?
About my drug rebates.
Yes.
I actually can't read this number. Is it 20 million or 29 million?
20.
20 million.
Well, 20 million
okay.
is the budget.
Yeah.
28,266.
That's a pretty substantial change from 31 million in the previous projection. I assume that we're not going to be spending that much less for drugs. And
right. I think there was some catch-up that we had to do in the last...
You know, I've heard catch-up for it the last 7 or 8 years. Or are we ever going to catch up? That doesn't make... It really doesn't make sense to me. But then I'm not part of your budget process.
I can have our pharmacist send you an email and let you know how it actually
it's calculated.
Materialized.
Okay,
yeah.
That probably would be
okay.
Is that Diana or?
Diana or Robert, yep.
Okay.
Well, and it does sound like there are a number of different circumstances, though, that do make sense with respect to what's contributing to the, for example, higher than estimated gross receipts taxes for the county supported Medicaid fund. It looks like there were some shifts in populations as far as managed care organizations are concerned. So, you know, I know they all may seem relatively small, but they do contribute to a bigger number. And that's one of the dynamics of the Medicaid budget is that when you have a small percentage adjustment, the total budget amounts are so large that they have a major impact. Actually, the amounts we're talking about are really very minuscule parts of the total Medicaid budget, but it's a lot of money because of the size of the budget around $6 billion. That's
correct. Just a couple of items as well. I want to point out that $20 million was built almost 18 months ago. And if you actually look at the lines, and I'll go ahead and read them off to you, if you look at our actuals today, we're at $19,665 million in terms of collections. So we've upped our projection to $28,266 million, and that's reflected in the bottom line.
That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on FY17? Okay. Seeing none, let's go to FY18.
Right. So FY18, you're going to see a lot of similar things that we've talked about previously, specifically line 1, line 7, and line 13 in our fee-for-service program. You're going to see decreases that we talked about in FY16 trended throughout FY17. Line 4, you're going to see the similar item as well. IME projection is kept flat from FY17, a drop of $9.8 million from the previous projection. Lines 18 and 19, you're going to see the same shifts that we've talked about in FY17 trended into FY18 and 19, which is that shift between traditional and media. Line 21, Centennial Care Physical Health, the projected expenditure decreases by $6.8 million. You're going to see similar themes to what we talked about in FY17, $5 million decrease associated with lower than previously estimated CY17 rates, and another $1.9 million decrease to the lower member months. Line 22, Centennial Care, Long-Term Services and Supports, an $11.6 million lower projection, reflects adjustments for lower rates, lower managed care premium rates, and also a projected change in the distribution and growth of LTSS members with a setting of care who receive services under the community benefit program. Line 23, Centennial Care Behavioral Health, an expenditure decrease of $46.1 million, and that's primarily associated with lower than previously estimated CY17 premium rates for the managed care organizations. Line 26, Medicare Part B, you're going to see a similar situation that we talked about in FY17. As CMS lowered their projected rates, we lowered the projection here for FY17 associated with that. Line 35, the health insurance provider fee, similar scenario as well. As we've lowered our payments to our managed care organizations, the amounts that they have to pay and the health insurance provider fee decreases, so we can decrease the projection there as well. Line 37 and 38, Medicaid expansion, a decreased projection of $110.1 million. Combination of things here also, $120 million lower from Medicaid expansion rates, premium rates lower than what we had originally projected, an increase of $7 million in member months, and an increase of $3.8 in IHS reconciliation payments. So I'll go ahead and pause there at the end of the FY18. Expenditure projection, your questions.
Jason, do you want to talk about the cost containment?
Oh, sure, yes.
Yeah.
So if you look at Line 42, we've not built in any additional cost containment, but we do continue to maintain $60 million of general fund, which is a total overall projection of $55.3 million of cost containment in this projection model.
I just have a very general question, because it does appear that the expenditures for the Medicaid expansion population are consistently lower. are actual enrollment projections not being realized, or
they're realized,
so it's just the lower utilization.
Lower medical costs.
Okay,
exactly. And I'm going to take us back to the FY16 discussion about the risk corridor and how much we took back from the managed care organizations. So that's flowed forward into this projection as well.
We no longer have a risk corridor
right.
for FY18, and so we use the experience that we had since 2014 to build the correct. Mm-hmm. rate based on what we were seeing in terms of utilization.
Okay.
So effectively, what I'm hearing at least is utilization is about what you project. So people are using the system the way you think they would be using them. So the reduction is that you're paying the providers less effectively. Am I hearing that?
That's not quite what I heard. What I heard was that the number of people projected to come into the program as a result of the expansion did come in, but their use of healthcare services is lower than what might have been projected.
Oh, I thought I heard Nancy say that utilization was about what they expected it to be.
No. Enrollment was what it was expected to be.
Well, I heard the enrollment part, too.
Okay.
All right. Misunderstood.
And we no longer have the corridor as a range. It's more based now on experience.
Actual experience,
exactly.
Right.
Okay. Yes, Mary.
So just a point of clarification, Jason. In fiscal year 17, the feds put a stay on the health insurance provider's fee, so that improved our outlook for that year, but it's reinstated.
Correct.
For fiscal year 18.
Yeah, that's line 35.
Right.
Yeah.
So with the executive order, though, that kind of put a stay on all the Affordable Care Act, how does that affect this, or does it? Does it sort of hold this in abeyance?
We don't have any for clarity from CMS at this point.
Correct.
But that could be one of the things, again, that they put a moratorium on. Okay.
That could be, and those are a ton of things that we're monitoring at the federal level. But until we have definite documentation from the federal government that they're changing things, we won't make the change to the projection.
That could be our surprise. Or
that very well could be. That could be.
Okay. Carolyn.
So that sort of leads me to my overarching concern is, are you guys doing any projections if we would have to go to block grids?
Let me answer the question. So we've talked about ways we could potentially get there. I think the answer is the same, though, until we know what the block grant really is and whether or not it's going to have parameters around it exactly. I think we'd just be kind of doing projections for projection's sake as opposed to actually having some parameters around it.
Well, and let me just say something to fortify what Jason said. There's been a lot of speculation as to how it would work, but the factors that would have to take effect is what would the block granted figure be based on?
Yes.
Would it be based on a previous year's expenditure and so forth? But so that everyone understands what we're talking about, Medicaid is an entitlement program. As long as whoever legally meets those requirements, they're entitled to that service, and the federal government continues to match with their approximately 70%. It varies from category to category, but the federal government continues to pay its share, and the state has to come up with its share. And that figure is never constant. It changes. If we are block granted, which is what the discussion is, there would be a finite amount of federal funding made available for Medicaid, and if the states feel that they need to go beyond that, it's all financed with state resources. So that's a very major, that would be a major change in the way Medicaid is even configured. And let's remember, too, that in the 50 states and the other areas where Medicaid is administered, they're all very different from state to state.
Right.
So Yes, Linda.
They're all very different, but they do have, or several of them have, things in common. And one that will hurt us drastically, I believe, is the fact that we haven't had a number of provider quality fee programs and so on to draw down those dollars. So other states that have had those in their base will be in much better stead in terms of their budget than New Mexico is. And that exacerbates the problem for those of us that work with providers that are in financial trouble at this point. So I'm very concerned and hopeful that we can further discussions about provider fees and alternative revenue sources, thinking that if these block grant programs are based on historical program expenditures, let's make history real quick. So just throw
point
that
is well
out.
Taken, Linda.
Throw that out.
Right. Thank you very much. Yes, Mike.
Yeah, while we're on the subject, it's good to hear that everybody's optimistic that we're going to get a block grant that's going to cover some of this.
I don't think that might be too strong a term, optimism.
I'm going to jump over to the revenue page. For the Medicaid expansion program, the Fed are providing us for, we estimate for FY 2018, $1,400,000, roughly. That's going to be huge sucking sand if it goes away. Are we doing? Can you tell us what is being done to make sure that human services, I mean HSD and Congress, is aware of the kind of effect taking $1.4 billion out of the New Mexico economy? Can you tell us what we are doing in New Mexico to try to communicate with Congress or with the Secretary of HSD about our health and human services, the effect that this would have on the economy in the state of New Mexico?
Secretary Ernest couldn't be here today, so I'm not sure what meetings have been taking place. I know there's been some letters back and forth. So, I don't have a lot of information to share about that today.
Any other questions from members of the committee? And we're on 2017 still.
2018 expenditures.
We're on 2018 expenditures. We actually haven't gone to revenues yet. Although Mike did. Okay, let's go to the revenue side.
So moving through the FY18 revenue page, I want to take you to the box on the right again. We are building in $11.8 million in that additional IHS, 100% federal revenue associated with the UNM agreement we spoke about in FY17. That reflects the 12-month projection as opposed to the 16 from the prior year. And again, that's subject to CMS approval. Line 54, County Supported Medicaid, we're projecting an increase there of about $1.5 million, and that's based upon what we saw in FY17 trended into FY18. Line 57, UNMIGT, we're projecting an amount from UNM for FY18. It's based upon the hospital contributing the entire state share portion for IME and GME, plus an additional $12 million to support the enhanced inpatient rates. So that takes us to line 79. Projection shows a general fund shortfall of just over $42 million, which is $40 million lower than the last projection.
Okay, any questions on the revenue side of FY18?
And I just want to point out, Larry, that shortfall includes the $55 million in cost containment that we built into the projection.
Okay. Or $16 million general fund.
Right. Okay, very good. Okay, seeing none, let's go to the next one.
Just the enrollment projection.
Right.
So that's the staple sheet, the landscape sheet. A few comments about that. We are generally seeing increases associated with enrollment, although we are seeing some slowing in terms of what we're projecting as growth. So again, we are continuing to project growth just not to the level that we had originally projected based upon the last projection. So you're going to see that in column E throughout the full benefit projection. And primarily it's associated with reduced retroactive eligibility and associated with parents and caretakers.
Yes, Mike.
Mr. Chairman, I'm slow this morning, and so I've let you go to this other page, and I really have some questions about the revenue. And it may be because I just was, my mind was wandering, or I wasn't listening, and you've already explained it, but could we go back to that revenue page?
If there are no objections, it's so ordered. Let's look at it.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Can you speak up a little?
I'll try. The actual general fund need that we're projecting for fiscal year 2018 is, which one of those numbers is that? It looks like it's
955-825.
Okay, 955-825. And I guess that would, you know, in a perfect world, that would be the appropriation we would be seeking. What is in current, what have we requested for the appropriation? What is in current legislation concerning that appropriation?
I'm not aware of any current legislation that includes that appropriation level. That was the governor's recommendation and the House, the Legislative Finance Committee recommendation.
Okay. And so we're showing here the appropriation for the prior.
We're showing the FY17 appropriation is the 913. Just give us some reference.
I don't remember the governor's recommendation, the LFC recommendation, but how did that compare to this number?
The LFC was quite a bit lower, and the governor's recommendation did get near this level.
Okay, near which level?
Near the 955. Near the 955.
The 955. Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
I apologize.
No, that's quite all right. Any other questions? Yes, Mary?
On that point, I thought I remember seeing in the LFC budget recommendation there was $63 million in a special appropriation that was tied to some other funding mechanism, and that absent attaining that, there would have to be cost containment equivalent to that. Was I misreading that, or...?
I think that number is a little bit lower. I think we're thinking it's about $42 million, but it would be either some type of a revenue measure to bring in that revenue at that level, or require cost containment or a combination of both.
So if their budget recommendation was already lower and is sort of has a contingency built in like that, does that make the situation worse if something doesn't pass?
I think the best way to answer the question is the LFC recommendation is essentially 913 flat general fund recommendation. So we would have to, absent any other additional revenue, have to take some action of roughly about $40 million, $42 million, plus the 16 that we've already built in order to live within that budget.
So we're all close to $60
million. Well, it's different ways of getting back to the same figure. But
yeah.
Yes, Linda.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, when you talked about that language that was attached to that $63 million, I think it mentioned something about revenues from providers. Was it anticipated that we would be looking at provider quality programs and so on under that catchphrase relating to $63
million? I don't know what is contemplated in that from the LFC request, so I think that's...
That language was put in by the LFC?
By the LFC.
Okay, thank you.
Mary.
I think the exact language is, it's revenues from the health services sector. However, that's defined.
There's not many options, so
yeah.
We're sort of getting down to this.
I thought I read my opinion in that section.
Okay, any other questions on the revenue side of 2017, was that, or 18?
18.
Any other questions? Okay, let's go back then to the enrollment data.
So I believe I was to the point where I was about to discuss the expansion population, which is kind of the middle section, and we are continuing to project growth in the expansion population. And we're roughly past the 3-year anniversary that the coverage was extended. And for January 2017, we were projecting, and we believe we'll hit 260,600 individuals in the expansion population. We're projecting to reach 265,000 by June of 2017 and 274,800 by June of 2018. Roughly a 6% growth from 16 to 17, and a 3.4% growth from 17 to 18.
And about a total of 950,000 Medicaid eligibles as a result of that.
Right, by the time we get to June of 2018.
Right.
Yes.
That's a significant portion of the state's population, almost half. So, right. Okay. Any questions of Jason with regard to the enrollment projections? Seeing none. Does that conclude your report?
That concludes the report.
Okay. Thank you, Jason. Any discussion on the part of the Medicaid Advisory Committee members? Okay. Seeing there are none, I know this is a shorter meeting than we normally have because we're not going to have any other public comment. So unless there is no other business on the part of the Medicaid Advisory Committee, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
And Larry, I'll just add that our next full committee meeting will be in April after the session, beginning of April.
Do you have a date?
I think we do, Lillian. It's the first Monday in April, correct?
First Monday.
Yeah, I think it's the third.
Okay. I saw a number of committee members who had either a point to bring
April
up or
3rd.
A question. April 3rd?
Yes.
Okay. April 3rd is the next tentative date for the Medicaid Advisory Committee.
Time? It's always
1 p.m. 1 p.m. to 4. Yeah.
Thank you.
1 p.m. to 4, and it's probably at the State Library in the Gary Carruthers Conference Room. Okay. Did I see some hands or is that okay? Then I'll entertain a motion to adjourn, unless you all want to stay here.
I don't want to stay here.
Okay, I have a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second to that motion? Seconded by Mary. Okay. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
I'll look forward to it.
I like that.